All right. This covers a lot of territory, this portion. It's kind of one of the longer ones that we do. Yeah. So I broke this up in several places so that we can easily understand it. It starts off by the judges, and that they give several guidelines on what a judge is supposed to be. And we can line up today what is going on in our court systems in the United States, because the very model of our court system was taken from the Torah. So what they're supposed to do is not what they're doing today. They take bribes. They don't listen to cases that they're supposed to listen to. They listen to the cases that and they have partiality in doing the things that are against the innocent. They don't really pay attention to any of this stuff. So this is how far we came as a nation. And this is not just true with America. This is true with Israel and basically all the Western world today. It says, do not distort justice and do not show partiality. Do not take a bribe, because a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the action of the right of righteous people. Justice. You are to pursue justice so that you may live and possess the land that Yahweh your Elohim has given you. There's a psalm that I was reminded of this past week when I was reading this. It's in Psalms 82, verses 1 through 8. This version I'm reading out of is this translation for translators. It says this way: God gathers all the rulers and judges who think they are gods for a meeting in heaven. And he tells them that he has decided this: you must stop judging people unfairly, and you must no longer make decisions that favor wicked people. Think about that. You must defend people who are poor and orphans, and you must act fairly toward those who are needy and those who have no one to help them. Rescue them from the power of evil people. Those rulers do not know or understand anything. They're very corrupt, evil, and as a result of their corrupt and evil behavior, it is through the foundations of the world, it is as though the foundation of the world is being shaken. I, the all-powerful God, previously said to them, you think you are gods? It is as though you are my sons. But you will die like the people do. Your lives will end like the lives of all rulers end. God, arise and judge everyone on the earth, because of all the people groups belong to you. So in this, he's reminding them of what we just read out of Deuteronomy here. It says they're supposed to act. They're not to distort justice. They're not to show partiality, and they're not to take a bribe. This was what the beginning of the Sanhedrin was supposed to be. But over the years, they've corrupted themselves. They did not listen to the poor and the needy's complaints. They did not take up their cause. They didn't do any of this stuff. And we find this very true today. It was until recently the Supreme Court, they said it was okay to kill babies in the womb. It was okay to do all these things. But then over this past year, they reverse that decision, say, well, it's up to the states. We should have never interfered. Well, that's about the first thing that I heard came out of their mouths was absolutely true. They shouldn't have interfered in what was already there, but the damage has already been done. So much so is that we have people in our political system that just say, well, we can set it up in federal lands and you can have an abortion there in a tent. Well, that's not the way Yahweh looks at it. He says, you're acting corruptly, and you're encouraging others to act corruptly as well. Straighten this mess up. Is the only way to do it is to repent and come back to him and do things according to his will and his purpose. And he goes on to, do not set up any wooden Asherim poles beside the altar, your Yahweh, your Elohim. Do not set up for yourselves sacred memorial stones, which is something that Yahweh, your Elohim, hates. Do not sacrifice to Yahweh, your God, your Elohim, any ox or sheep that has any kind of defect or serious flaw, because that's something that is detestable to Yahweh, your Elohim. The first thing that came to mind was in Malachi. And back into the prophets there, they said, how do you rob me? By tithes and offerings. You haven't given what you have. You've given me the poorest thing that you have. If it's grapes, you give me the worst grapes. If it's sheep, you give me the ones that are broken legged or lame from birth and blinded. It's the worst thing. It's your second best. He wants all of us. He wants all of us to give him the first best thing. The tithe of everything that comes out of our household, everything that comes off our lands, the best fruit, the best animals, because that's how Yahweh sustains his priest, his people. He already built into the system about the poor and the needy. We're to give them the best, not the second best. Hey, have you ever considered that when you go, if you had to go to a food bank and what kind of produce is there? I've had to go there a couple times because we had a need. And it's always the withered kind, the poorest fruit, the poorest vegetables. He requires that we give the best that we have, not the second best. Oh, it's just an afterthought we're going to give to Yahweh. And it doesn't really matter. It's like, I'm giving, but it's the worst. He doesn't want our worst. He wants our best. He wants us to perform our best. He wants us to do things according to his will and purpose. And his do not set up sacred memorial stones. This is for honoring the dead and other gods. It's detestable unto him. He doesn't want us to mix our worship of him with pagan religions, and that's exactly what the church has done today. They mix pagan religion with his practices. He says, do not do as the Gentiles have done. They do this intentionally. They do this because, oh, it makes them feel better. Oh, yeah, I've done what God wants me to do, but then turn around and go find a place up in the hills and worship and give the best thing to their silly gods that are no gods. And if they're found among you within your gates, one of your cities that Yahweh, your Elohim, has given you, a man or a woman who is doing something that's evil in the eyes of Yahweh, your Elohim, by transgressing his covenant. Or a man or a woman is going and serving other gods and bowing down to them, to the sun or the moon or and this says army of heavens, but it's the stars. And what have we done? We've done exactly the same thing. We bow down to these things, the things that our fathers did not do. I'm talking about in the beginning part of this. They did not serve these gods, but later on, after they got into the land a while, they said, well, how is it that they serve their gods? Maybe we'll get a better response from their gods, and God's not answering us anymore because of their sin. They don't want to repent for their sins, so they're continually doing things that are against what Yahweh wants them to do. And you're told about this, and you listen and investigate diligently. It is established, and the charge is true, that this abomination has been committed in Israel. And we're not to take pity on them because they're our brother, our sister, our mother, our father, our best friend, or anyone that has done these things, these detestable acts. Because Yahweh will judge us, and we're saying, well, you're just doing what they're doing by not saying anything. What did he say? If you know something to be a matter of fact, that they turn around and did something that was against what he said, and we don't say a word, is as if we did it ourselves. And he wants us to be pure and holy before him, so we will not have that evil against us. So that person is to be put to death on the basis of how many witnesses? Two or three. Not one is he put to death. It's just supposed to be two or three. And yet in Yeshua's case, how many witnesses came forward to testify against him? They've got two. And they couldn't agree on one thing. Oh, they brought another one. He couldn't agree. And finally, he had to say himself the words that would condemn him, essentially. And that was that he was who they said he was. He was the Messiah. He is the God that they were supposed to serve. He is the one that God sent. And we'll read that in John later on. And that he was the one that was sent to say the words of the Father. He was the one that was supposed to tell them the words that they wouldn't listen to on Mount Sinai. And they were supposed to listen to him and do what he says. but they refused to listen. They stopped up the ears, and they went and they brought him before three illegal trials. They did not hold up. They didn't uphold the law. They bent it to what they wanted them to do. In fact, they brought in other law. They brought, first it was Sanhedrin. Well, they couldn't make an agreement there, so they brought them from the Romans twice. So they had three illegal trials back to back. It was not supposed to be done at night, and yet they did it anyways. They never did pay attention to what Yahweh said. From the very beginning, when they entered the land, for 490 years, they did not do hardly any of the things as a nation that Yahweh said for them to do. They didn't let the land rest. They didn't treat the poor and the widow and the orphan as they should have. The priests were often neglected, and they wouldn't feed them like they were supposed to. And I was reading, I think it was in Nehemiah or Ezra, we're talking about the priests. They were neglected to the point where they had to find jobs for themselves. And then when the prophet came back, said, "What are you doing? Why are you working this job?" He said, "Well, because the people didn't bring the proper gifts. They didn't bring anything. They didn't bring any sacrifices. They weren't able to eat. They had to support their families." So that was the thing. Are we neglecting God's people? Are we neglecting them to the point where they have to go and tell them, "Oh, we can't do that anymore. You go to the government and they will feed you. They will clothe you. They will take you out." They're turning. There's no clothing for them. Why? Because God's people did not take care of them. If any case is too difficult for you to make a decision, whether it involves a homicide, a lawsuit, an assault, or any matters of controversy within the gates of your cities, then proceed by going up to the place that Yahweh, your Elohim, will choose. Well, right now, there isn't anyone to hear the case. There are things that we can do according to Matthew 18 when it involves things that are against Torah and against the community at large. There are things that we can do. But by and large, most people don't listen to what God says anymore. They walk away. They do it according to the way they think is right. They say, "Oh, we can go and have a feast day here in Medford, Oregon, or in Texas, and on some ranch out there in the middle of nowhere, or we can go to Cowbell Lake or anywhere else and do whatever we want." And yet, that's not what he says. He says we're to go where he places his name. And right now, it's Jerusalem. Right now, this is where we're supposed to bring these matters before Yahweh. We're to go to the priests who are from the tribe of Levi and a presiding judge at that time and lay out the case, and they will declare the verdict to you. And guess what? We don't get the option of going by it or not. We have to go according to what they said. And it's the same thing in our court system in the United States, that if we decide we're not going to listen to what that old judge says, what happens to them? Oh, they get cited for contempt. They spend more time in jail, or they get thrown in jail by not listening to what the judge says, and they get fined, their property is seized, and it just goes on and on. You will listen to what the judge says here. Even as crooked as they may be, you still have to listen to what they say because it impacts your life. And then you are to act according to the verdict that they will declare to you from the place that Yahweh will choose, and you're to be careful to carry out everything that they instruct you to do. Yet act according to the instructions they give you, according to the judgment they speak to you, because they are the representative of God. That's why we don't get to choose whether we're going to listen to them or not. There's things that I just don't understand sometimes, but it doesn't mean I don't obey what they say. But I have to follow what's in the Torah. I may not understand it thoroughly, the ins and outs and everything, but we have to try. We have to do it the best that we can. And if there's something that comes along and we don't understand it, we take it before the Father and he'll explain it to us. Any man who acts presumptuously by not listening to the priest who preside and services Yahweh, your Elohim, there or by not listening to the judge, that man is condemned to die. I have not seen any case where that has happened. There's ever other cases like that. We don't see what it's in Israel, if this has actually happened or not. I do remember one case that was brought. It was about the Benjamites, where this is in Jeremiah, and the guy went through, the priest went through, he was on his way back home, and these Benjamites, I believe it was Benjamin, I have to think about that one. But anyways, he had his concubine with him, and they killed her. Benjamin, thank you. So they killed her, and then he had to inquire of all the tribes of Israel, all 12, not just one or four or six, all 12, to find out what the matter was. Who's the one that was responsible for this? And they found out, and they refused to listen to what was being said. And it was so much so, all the men died as a result of what these men did. As it said, if you know something and you don't present that person who is, you're hiding them, you're just as much as if you did it yourself. They and all the people will hear what has happened, and they will not act presumptuously anymore. As a warning to us, we're to listen to everything he says and do everything according to what the priest up until this point has said. And that the last Sanhedrin that met was when they determined the Hillel 2 calendar. So after that, it was the rabbis who made these decisions. That's a different story altogether. The laws concerning Israel's king. And I find it interesting that it's in this section that we're talking about the king of Israel, and it's not happened yet. And it doesn't happen for several hundred years later, or a couple hundred years later, after it's set in Shiloh for, 400 years, the Ark of the Covenant and the Tabernacle. It sat there for a long time, and they didn't have a king then. It was during Samuel's time that they just said, your sons are corrupt, you're dying, and we want to have a king. And he explained to them, if you want a king, this is what's going to happen. Yahweh had them explain it verbatim, what was expected, what would happen with their sons and daughters as a result of them having a king. And it was at this point, you get into what's coming next. But that king must not accumulate more and more horses for himself. He must not send the people back to Egypt in order to accumulate more horses. Because Yahweh has said to you, you must not go back that way again. He must not accumulate more wives, or his heart could go astray. He must not accumulate more excessive silver or gold himself. And the first person that came to mind was Solomon. He had over 1,000 wives and concubines. He had more silver and more gold than any other person up until that time and after that. He acquired so much wealth. And because his heart was turned by his wives, the latter end of his life was not like he was at the beginning, where Yahweh asked him, what do you want? He says, I don't have the wisdom to guide your people. They are numerous. How do I do this? He says, Yahweh told him, because you did not ask me for these other things, I will give you the wisdom that you need and everything else that I've said, that I offered you. But then he had accumulated over 1,000 wives and concubines, and he went serving other gods, and it just got worse after that. Oh, yes, we had a few good kings after that. Not many. Most of them were evil and corrupt, just as he was at the latter end of his life. Must not accumulate excessive silver and gold. Do you realize that at the time of the construction of the temple, that there was so much silver they stopped counting it, and it was considered common. It had no value anymore. It was like a penny. Who uses a penny anymore? Even in Jordan, they don't use pennies. They have them. I've seen them. They're about as big as a quarter. They're huge, but they don't use them. Why? Because they have no value. The silver was just like that. And you could use them for candlesticks and silverware and everything else. And it was not like it is today. And it was gold, and it was so much gold and so much silver. And yet, the gold still held its value for the most part, but the silver did not. And he had so many horses and charioteers and footmen and everything else. And yet his heart was turned and he served other gods. Because even though he had written out the scroll, or they had written out the scroll for him, and he read it, he had amassed so much knowledge that it just went to his head, and he got to the point where he didn't need God anymore, apparently. Even at the very end of his life, you don't really hear him talking about God as much. But he did write a letter to his son, and his son did not listen to him either. And that's when the kingdom was split. The law was supposed to remain with him, and he was to read it all the days of his life so that he would learn to fear Yahweh, his Elohim, by carefully carrying out the words of this Torah or law, that these statutes, so that his heart does not grow haughty towards his brothers and turn away from the set of commands, this set of commands, either to the right or to the left, so that the days of his royal reign in Israel, and as well that his sons may be many. Well, his days were long, but Rehoboam's life wasn't as long. And Jeroboam, I believe, is his general. His life didn't end well either, because they turned away from Yahweh. And after that, things were very bad for Israel. The kingdom was divided, and they were at war with each other on a regular basis. They would fight each other. They would fight the foes coming in. And when your kingdom's divided, it will not stand. And he goes on to provision for the priests and Levites. If we don't take care of God's people, the ones that he set over us to teach, to preach, to minister before him day and night in the tabernacle or in the temple, then we neglect Yahweh himself. Yahweh is not like the pagan gods where they put a plate in front of them, put honey, and the ants came and ate it. And they said, oh, look, he ate it. No, he didn't eat it. The ants did. And the insects and the animals did. But therefore, the provision of the priesthood, we're not to neglect them, no matter where we're at. Where if you're being fed, you need to make sure you make provision for those who are feeding you. You need to make provision for those who are unable to feed themselves. This is what he means. He said, you have fasting and prayer, and yet I want to tell you what my version of fasting is, not your version of fasting where you have the long faces and an unwashed face and all this stuff, and you just look like you're sad and all that. He says, you know what it is? When you take that food that you would have eaten and you give to some poor guy that has no food and maybe hasn't eaten for 3 or 4 days or longer, because it's coming to our nation and around the world that there's going to be more and more people in this position, and we'll have plenty of opportunities to feed them and clothe them. And there'll be a testimony against us if we neglect them. So there, he said also that there's a new prophet just like Moses. He said, I'm going to raise somebody up just like you from amongst their brethren. And that was Yeshua from the tribe of Judah. A prophet is generally an inspired man. He prophesies that prophecy. It was holds the office of prophet. He's the one that speaks God's word. It doesn't necessarily mean that Yahweh just spoke this word to him. He's the one that tells them what is in the word so they would understand. In a way they would understand. John the Baptist, he was a prophet unto them. Yeshua, definitely a major prophet to them, and yet they rejected both of them. Carte blanche, most of the time, John was out there in the wilderness because he was feared for his life, because he was supposed to be thrown into the river or be killed, and yet that was by the Romans' decree. At the edge of the sword, he was hidden away because they were afraid that somebody was going to rise up against them, and yet that didn't happen that way, because Yeshua didn't come to bring war to them. He brought a war a different way. It was a spiritual battle. He brought it to where he would confound them by the words that he spoke. They were blinded. Their hearts were hard, and he tried to speak to them, and they would not hear. And yet those who heard and listened and obeyed God's laws, he came to them and spoke plainly to them, his disciples. Laws concerning city of refuge. Well, there was three set up on the east side of Jordan and three set up on the west side. And I don't recall if they actually were able to get more cities of refuge or not. But this is for the innocent man. We may have killed somebody by accident. Yes, he was guilty, killed his brother, but he didn't intentionally do it out of malice or anger or wanting to take something from him, as like Cain was to Abel. But he did it purely by accident. There's an example given about the axe that flew off the handle. Now, was he guilty? He didn't maintain that axe to the point to where if it was loose that he would make sure it was fast and steadily. Maybe it was neglect, but he had to run for his life because the kinsman redeemer or the avenger of blood could find him and kill him and be guiltless in that. But yet he was innocent in killing him because it wasn't done because of anger or malice or he wanted to steal from him or take something from him. It was purely an accident. And there's also in here this portion that talks about if he was guilty in this, he was to be taken away from that place and stoned. And the ones who were witness to this would be the first to lay their hands on him. We're also not to move our brothers or the property boundaries that were around us. We may not know who put it there. We may not know anything about it. We may not know that's actually a property boundary of somebody, our neighbor. But if we move it, we could be infringing on his property, and then there's going to be a libel cause against us. And that Yahweh sees this. He knows why they're there. Jacob put some markers up. So did Abraham. So did, Jacob did one with Laban. And that one there is still there today. In fact, from what the stories I heard during the Six-Day War, the enemy was coming towards that direction, and it was approaching that marker, and there was an angel of the Lord standing there with a big guy, they said, and he had put his hand up, and he said, stop. They were like, what do we do now? So they turned around and went back, and they had an answer to the commanders. Why are you back here? Why aren't you fighting the enemy? Well, if you saw what we saw, you would have turned around and ran too. God knows why these markers are there. We may not understand why they're there, but he knows. Okay. And then it's about the witnesses. If we bring a malicious case against somebody else, Yahweh has a way of discerning who is right and who is wrong. If you're a false witness, and your witness could condemn him to death, or take property from him, or cut off his hand, or poke out his eye, or knock out his tooth. Whatever you wanted to happen to him, because you falsely accuse your brother, he says, Yahweh says, not me, that that's exactly what's going to happen to you who brought the false claim. We don't have that in our judicial system in the United States. People can make false accusations all the day long, and there's nothing done to them. So we don't have a just justice system. Yahweh cares about us so much that he wants to make sure we take care of our family and our property concerning warfare. So when you're approaching the battle and the priests come forward to speak to the people, there's a couple things that they don't want us to do. One is our heart becomes weak. Secondly, not to be afraid and do not tremble. Have you ever been so afraid that you just insides are just trembling and then your legs start trembling and your whole body is weak? He says, don't do so. Don't dread them, the enemy, because guess what? He that is in you is greater than he that is in the world. Because Yahweh, your Elohim, is going with you to do battle for you against your enemies to save you. We're not fighting. He's fighting them. And it may be through us. It may be around us. The angels of the Lord comes around and do battle for with our enemies, just as it did in the case of Jehoshaphat, where they were so confused, were fighting each other. And in some instances, they ran before nothing, as if a leaf would blow, and they thought 100 people were following them with swords and all that. The imagination is mighty, mighty strong force in our thinking. We think something is happening, but it really isn't. It's either a threat is either real or perceived. And Yahweh's a master at putting fear in his enemies. Whoever has built so the commanders will come out. So they say, whoever has built a new house but is not dedicated, let him go and return to his house so that he does not die in battle and somebody else dedicates it. And again, about the vineyard, the same thing. If it hasn't been even past the sacred status, which is so many years, the first part would be going to him, to Yahweh, first fruits, and then the rest would go to us, and then we would tithe off of that. Let him return so that does not happen, that he dies in battle, and another man is the first to eat of it. You know, when there's trees there on the land, and you come up and you have 5 years before you can even eat of it, and you die in battle, you're never going to get any fruit off of that tree. Whoever pledged to be married, this is betrothal to a woman, has not consummated the marriage, let him return home and complete the process so that they can produce offspring for Yahweh and his kingdom. Then the officers will speak to the people and say, whoever is afraid and faint-hearted, may he return to his house so that the hearts of his brothers of Israelites do not melt in cowardice like his heart. Fear is contagious. It's like a cancer in the body. If we don't take care of it soon, it could infect somebody else. Just like at the time when they're getting ready to enter the land, this is the place where, and they told Moses, let's send some people up there, as we read earlier in Deuteronomy, and investigate the land so that we can see what Yahweh is saying is true. Well, they turned not a reconnaissance mission, but they're out there sightseeing. They turned it into a reconnaissance mission, and they were afraid of what they saw. Rather than trusting in what God has done up until that point, we are not to be afraid of our enemies, because God is greater than our enemies. As Elijah, his servant, was afraid because the armies of the enemy was all around and encamped around them. And he said to Yahweh, open his eyes so my servant can see. And then he saw the armies of the Lord encircled the camps of the enemy. There was more of them than there were the enemy. And then he said, strike them with blindness. So he always spoke them with blindness. He said, this is not the place where you want to be at. He took them back to their place where they started from and said, this is where you need to be at. Well, you're talking about being embarrassed. Here you were at one place, and now you're back to where you started at, and now you have to answer the question, is why are you back here? You didn't defeat your enemy. Then the last section here was about atonement of the unsolved murders. So this is about a guy who was found in the middle of two, maybe there's three or four cities, and to measure the distance between that man and the cities around him, and see which one was closest to him. And then they would go to that city and discuss it with the elders there. And then they would have to make a determination if there was guilt on anybody in that city. And they couldn't find anybody. Then they were supposed to make an atonement. And they washed their hands of it, saying, let it not this sin fall on us, because we had nothing to do with it. And it wasn't just something that was done happenstance. Oh, no, we didn't do anything about that. No, we don't know nothing about it. And it could very well be that they did know something about it. I tell you what, Levites are pretty smart people. And Yahweh has put in them a way to discern who's telling the truth and who's not. You can't fool God. You may fool men, but you can't fool God. And he knows who the guilty party is. And perhaps they couldn't find anyone. And that's why they had to do this break in the neck of this animal in the gully and wash their hands over it. Somebody had to die. And it was that animal, a heifer, not worked. It's kind of interesting. Not worked. It's the same requirements for a red heifer sacrifice. A killing of red heifer for the ashes. Not to have been worked. Never a yoke placed on it. And that one there was what they used to cleanse the sin off of the people, the uncleanness. In this case here, they washed their hands over it and said, let it not fall on us. Let us do what God calls us to do. Let us do everything according to His will and purpose. And don't neglect those who do service for you. Don't neglect the poor and the widow and the orphan. Because that is the ultimate test. If we don't do that, if we take care of the widow and the poor and the orphan, God will see that and reward us. And blessings to you.